Welcome to today's deep dive. I'm your host.
And I'm your resident policy expert, ready to get into it.
Usually, when we look at a legal document, it reads like a sterile instruction manual. You know, insert tab A into slot B and you get the outcome.
Right, like a very rigid mathematical formula for society.
But then you open up South Africa's Housing Act 107 of 1997, and suddenly it's not an instruction manual at all. It's this living blueprint trying to actively rebuild a nation's social fabric.
Yeah, and you might wonder why you should care about a 1997 housing law from another continent.
Exactly. Well, because this text is an absolute masterclass in how a country takes a lofty promise and forces it into a highly structured operational reality. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it. So the whole thing is rooted in Section 26, their 1996 Constitution.
Which essentially guarantees every citizen the right to adequate housing, right?
Exactly. But the law's preamble defines housing in a really unexpected way. It explicitly calls housing a process and a product of human endeavor.
It sounds like the Act treats housing as a living, breathing ecosystem rather than just a massive bricklaying exercise.
That is a great way to put it. What's fascinating here is that the law absolutely refuses to define housing just as a physical shelter.
Because if you're trying to reverse generations of historical inequalities, you can't just like drop a million identical concrete boxes on the edge of town and call it a day.
No, you really can't. The Act frames housing as a vital driver of the national economy. It demands that the government actively prioritize the poor, eliminate slums, and ensure racial and social integration.
So because it's such a complex ecosystem, a single gardener isn't enough, right? Huh? The Act sets up an interconnected three-tier engine.
Yeah, across the whole government to make it happen. You've got national, provincial, and local levels.
National sets the overarching policy, like publishing the National Housing Code.
Right, and crucially, they maintain a national data bank to track housing metrics.
Yeah.
And they break this down by race, gender, and age.
Wow, that is really granular.
Extremely. And it isn't just paperwork, you know, it's how they force equity down to the local level. You can't fix inequality if you don't track exactly who is getting the keys.
Makes total sense. And then provincial governments act as the administrative middle tier, right? Like managing funds and approving projects.
Exactly. They handle the money and the green lights.
So what does this all mean for a local mayor? They can't just wait for the capital to build houses. They have to proactively act as real estate developers.
They really do. Local municipalities are the boots on the ground here. They designate the land and provide engineering services.
Why?
But they're also sometimes acting directly as developers. The Act mandates them to create environments conducive to housing, taking on actual costs and risks.
Okay, but with local municipalities pumping vast resources into building these homes, the state had to ensure this public investment wasn't immediately exploited by speculators, right?
Oh, absolutely. That was a huge fear.
Yeah.
And that brings us to sections 10A and 10B.
Right, the guardrails on subsidies, the infamous 8-year rule.
Yes. These sections place really intense restrictions on state-subsidized housing. Basically, a beneficiary cannot voluntarily sell their home within 8 years without first offering it back to the provincial housing department.
And with absolutely no profit paid out, right?
None at all.
Yeah.
Even in involuntary sales by creditors, the property cannot be sold for more than the original subsidy amount.
Here's where it gets really interesting. But isn't it highly restrictive to tell someone they legally cannot sell their own home if they get a new job and need to move?
I mean, it does sound restrictive at first glance. It raises a valid question about individual freedom versus collective protection.
Right.
But imagine the alternative. Imagine being a vulnerable family handed the keys to your first real home. The very next day, a speculator knocks on your door with a briefcase full of cash.
Oh, wow.
Right. It's a fraction of the home's true worth, but it's more money than you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Without that 8-year rule, desperate people would just sell.
And the state's limited affordable housing stock would immediately get eaten by private flippers.
Exactly. The restriction preserves the asset for the people who actually need it.
So to sum it up, the 1997 Housing Act is this massive machinery of data, funding, and local empowerment, heavily guarded by anti-speculation laws to fulfill a constitutional right.
It's a very ambitious attempt to engineer an equitable society from the ground up.
Look at the housing market in your own city today. If your local government adopted this Act's philosophy, treating housing as a vital socioeconomic process rather than just a commodity, and implemented a strict 8-year anti-flipping rule on affordable homes, how drastically would your community change?
That is a really provocative thought to end on.
Something for you to mull over. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.